accession number 20010, reel 2.
Charles Sutton, reel 2.
Yeah. Well, when we got to the forest of Nieppe, sort of amusing thing happened. We had to turn all the mules loose. They were beautiful mules. Turn them all loose. And we, the British ranks, were armed. We had, I remember, twin Lewis guns, and we had our rifles and bayonets and that. And then we were told to dig in where the Cypriots were sort of put back. They weren't armed at all. They were put back to dig in, you know, where they could. And we were put out of this. What bloody use we'd have been, God only knows. And I always remember, first of all, sitting in the slit trench we dug with a regular soldier, old Gault his name was, because bloody General was Gault. We used to call him Lord Gault. And he's reading, I always remember, one of these little new penguin type books, sitting there reading. And there's me, keep on looking at the top, see if any, the Jerry's or something would come in. And he said, why the bloody hell didn't you sit still? He said, keep, if there's anybody about, he said, you keep popping about, you'll get it right through the bloody head. So, I said, I can't understand how you can sit there reading the bloody book. He said, look, if your number's on it, you'll have it. He said, sit down and behave your bloody self. Now, he was a great calming thing on me, he was. Oh, cool. Anyway, the upshot of it was, the company sergeant major said, came over to us and said, now look, we're having a meal, you know, cooked, and we'll take it in turns. When I blow the whistle, right, and on, I say, one blast or two blasts, you come out of two blasts, somebody else comes out. So I blew the bloody blast on the whistle, and the mules all thought it was water and feed. They all started coming in, because it used to be done that way, you know, blowing on the whistle for, you know, feed up. Bloody mules will come in. And of course, luckily we had no Germans or anything. And I think it was the time when Hitler stopped them from some reason, I don't know. Anyway, that was that funny bit. The thing was, regarding the companies, they were sent back into Dunkirk and onto ships, because they weren't armed, so there weren't any, what's your name, mules were all left, so the Germans had them. So, but we had to go to the town major and formed into this ad hoc bloody infantry battalion, sent right out to the, oh God, the other end of the beaches, right out of Dunkirk. And
La Panne.
Yeah,
Dunes.
Yeah, I suppose right away. And when you look back, you could see, you know, the sort of harbour thing of Dunkirk. Anyway, I was with a bloke who was a Royal Engineer, and we would dig this bloody slit trench and everything, and we were being mortared. I always remember that, and I remember we're ducking down like that. And I remember him shouting in my ear, he said, I know why my effing old man never talked about the bloody war, he said, because he'd seen sod all. I never forgot that. Anyway, the upshot of it was, we were relieved by, I think it was the Fusiliers. We were relieved by the Fusiliers, and we were ordered sort of to make our way back to the beaches, where small boats were coming in to take us off. See, so we got back on, well, moved back on the beaches. There was sort of German planes, I'd tell you, dive for cover and all this business. But the Germans had set alight some bloody oil drums or something in Dunkirk, and the big black smoke was helping us, because it came right over the beaches. It saved us a lot. You could see the German planes through gaps of it, you know. Anyway, the upshot of it was, you go in the queue up, and I don't remember seeing any panicking, I can say that. Queuing up, rifle over your head, moving to these little boats, and then they say, it's enough, Right? I can't bloody swim. I touched my bloody water up there. So we got back. So I'm been powered up with a couple of blokes. And we could see these ships which were along these jetties, you know. And I said, well, you know, and it's coming on dock, why can't we make our way over there instead of trying to get on these bloody little boats and everything? So during the night, we made our way and we came across a couple of French, you know, soldiers who we said to them, we had our water bottles full of rum, which we'd knocked off from stuff what had been left, you know. We'd filled our water bottle, and because we were bloody thirsty. So we spoke to these two French troops, and they had water. So we shared our rum with them, and got sort of happily pissed, you know, and always remember them teaching us to sing, what is it, some French sort of little song.
Oh, Près de ma blonde.
Yeah. Yeah. And they came with the beach then in the morning. It was quite crowded with troops. And we were moving towards this jetty. And standing up on the jetty with a microphone was a naval officer with a duffel coat. And these big black clouds of smoke from the what's-her-name was really thick over the beach. Thank Christ it was, because if the German planes had seen, what could have really slaughtered us. Anyway, he was, I found out after, Commander Clouseau, a Canadian in the Royal Navy. And he said over this microphone to everybody, you are now under command of the Royal Navy. And everybody cheered. And he said, right, as groups, I will call you up in groups to go along this jetty thing. Now, there's holes blown in this jetty where they put some, a little, in some of the holes, they put a sort of a, that narrow gauge railway line across it, you know, so you could get across. But he said that if you fall in, there's not much can be done to help you, you know. Anyway, the blokes behaved themselves terrifically, and we, when my our group went, I can't remember the name of this destroyer, but we had to, off this jetty, there was no sort of gangway, you had to jump down into it, and all what I remember greatly of that was I had my rifle, and the Matlow saying to me, throw that rifle on that pile. I said, that's my bloody rifle, you know, you're always zeroed, and you had your own rifle. I said, no, it's mine. Put it on a pole, you're not allowed to carry arms about. So we had to show it on the pole. Told to go below decks, right, which they gave us a bloody great mug of, I always remember that, bloody great mug of cocoa or something. It was cocoa, yeah. And the bloody Matlows were marvellous. And then when we came away, we were straddled by bombs, and some of the lads were, couldn't come below because the decks were crowded with troops as well. See, who couldn't come below. We were lucky being sent below. We didn't. We would have preferred to stay on deck, you know, but we had to go below. But some of the lads on there were, you know, killed with the shrapnel. And that. But that's the only trouble we had. The crossing was absolutely smooth, and we got to Dunkirk and unloaded. Dover, and unloaded, and straight onto trains. The organisation was marvellous. And then all the way, I mean, we ended up at Blackdown and Orsha. I don't know how they worked the trains, I don't know. But every station, there was women there giving you food and everything, because we hadn't had much to eat at all.
Do you know the name of the ship that brought you back?
No, I don't know. Can't remember. Can't remember it. It was good, you know, and the sort of organisation. And then we got there, they documentated you, find out what your unit was, told them my unit was, you know, the Cypriot pack transport, and they said, right, it was up at Melton Mowbray where the unit was. So when we got there, we were sent on a short 3-day sort of leave, and then had to report back. And in the meantime, all the Cypriots had been armed, right? And they were in intensive training alongside with the Royal Scots Fusiliers, and also doing turn and turn about with expecting the German invasion sort of thing, guarding the coast. And because the Cyps enjoyed this, they loved it, you know. So they were really armed then, right? And,
you mean they were pleased to have the weapons?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Because they joined the army to be soldiers. And when they didn't get any arms over, because they didn't have them out there enough, that's the reason. But it just shows you why the bloody government, sending them to France, hoping they were going to be armed while they were out there. Like the 7th Battalion and 6th Battalion Royal Sussex, formed, sent out without hardly any arms at all to be pioneers, and then gradually get the arms. Well, they were in France. They bloody well got slaughtered, more or less, when the Germans came through. See? And most of them were captured. I mean, that was the way things bloody were. It was terrible. God knows what it's going to be like now if anything happens. This is what I say. So our Cypriots all got armed. They were all okay and happy that now they were, you know. Now, the next thing we knew, this was on the, I think we sailed on the 4th of August, 1940. Yeah, 4th of August, 1940, from near Greenock, Glasgow, on the Andes, which was a Royal Mail liner, and hadn't, I understood, it hadn't even done a maiden voyage. It was a modern liner, turned into a troop ship. And we left Greenock, I think it was on the 4th of August, and I always remember we went out, because it was crowded with troops, right, and all the, what's your name, boarded up and all this, but it was a lovely ship, and it had stabilisers as well. And we went out, and we must have gone straight out, right into mid-Atlantic, and the ship was covered in ice. I always remember that. And then it must have turned down, joined the convoy, and in the convoy was the Empress of Britain, Empress of Australia, Strathaden, right? They were the ships near us. Right on the horizon was the naval, you know, cruiser escort, and there was the destroyers around. Anyway, we go right down the Atlantic, and then we call in at West Africa, I suppose, for getting food aboard, I don't know. We weren't allowed ashore at all there. We had to stay aboard. And then when we finished, we had to lay off outside waiting for the rest of them doing all that. Then we went from there down to and stopped at Cape Town. And that's where we were allowed ashore. And we spent a marvellous, I think it was about 3 weeks there. Right, and entertained beautifully by the the South African people, taken out and up on Table Mountain and God knows what. It was lovely. And then from there, round we went to and landed up the Red Sea. I always remember my mate saying, "Oh, Blackie," it was evening time, so he said, "Bloody sea is red." I said, "Well, of course it is. Look at the bloody sky." You remember that? He was a cockney, same as me, actually. Anyway, we landed in Egypt and then went to Geneva Camp, the infantry base depot at the camp. And we were, our camp was the sort of last, there was the infantry base depot, and our camp was alongside. And we always, it was the, Christ Almighty, what was the name of going on? I know we had an up and a downer with one of the infantry, because it was a depot for training, right? And one of the infantry RSMs who had bloody his office part all marked out in these sort of right, you could get this sort of whitish rock things there. And I forget now what it actually was, it was comical. Anyway, our bloke's done their training again there, right? And then suddenly we got the mules. The mules dished out to us. And they were a lovely set of mules as well, you know. And so there was two companies. There was a number one and number two companies. It was then the Cyprus Regiment.
And you were in number one?
I was in number one company, yeah. And I remember there was a hell of a lot of work to do, you know, getting the mules shod and all this business, and getting them broken into the army saddlery and all this business.
How do you break them in?
Oh, well, you put the bloody saddle on them, right? And you have to walk them around. Some are all right straight away, no problem. And others, you know, it might be awkward, like anything, you know, first of all. But then you gradually break them down, walk them around and load them up. And we didn't have a great deal of time to do all this, you see, because the desert campaign was on, where what's his name? We'd driven the Tai Tai army back almost to Tripoli, wasn't it? You know, on the desert.
Wavell's Push.
Yeah, Wavell's Push. And that's how they allowed the 5th Indian Division was down in the Sudan, or come from India, and were in the Sudan. The 4th Indian Div was on the desert. And that, Wavell allowed them to come down to this, and we went down with them to Eritrea, but of course it was all by train, and naturally, we, you know, units were going down there piecemeal. You know, they couldn't put hold to, and as they got there, that so they were immediately worked, you know, the infantry blokes and that. So when we got there, we, what was the name of the bloody place?
Not Massawa.
No, no. We first of all, on the train, oh, we went down the Nile on the boat, that's right. No, went down the Nile. As one, and then on the train, I think, down to Khartoum. It was quite, I remember, about a 3-day trip on the Nile, right? And we had the Nile boat with two barges with the mules in it, each side of the ship, and went down until we got to where we unloaded. It was the other side of bloody Khartoum, I think. No, this side of Khartoum. And then we went, had to get on the train. I was a corporal then, and I had charge of the baggage and stuff on the train to guard it with, you know, the Cypriot under command, like to guard the train. Well, the mules all went on another train, all with the mule, what's his name. And we got down to Kassala, right, unloaded at Kassala, and that's when we went, marched, right, into Eritrea and down, what's his name, and we had to do trip waterhole to waterhole, and one of our longest marches there was 35 miles in one trip, right, and sounds a lot, doesn't it, and 120 in the shade, right, and we'd done it, and as I say, you had to go from waterhole to waterhole, and we were issued with, always remember, two little pills, a blue one and a white one, which you chucked into the water, and some of the water you had almost was the colour of beer. But you didn't turn your bloody nose up at it when you're really thirsty. And it was quite an experience. And then we got caught up then with the main body of the troops, that was at Agadat, and then went with them, and we served with the different regiments because we were so short of mules. The Argyles, Royal Fusiliers, Garwallis, Sikhs, Argyles, Royal Fusiliers, West Yorks. Bloody good, well, they were, yeah, West York. And
what was so good about them?
It's like everything else. I mean, when you, the others were good, but these were exceptional. They sort of give you bloody good grub, and you know what I mean, and didn't stint you for anything, you know, and it was great. And being attached, you know, to units, you come under their ration strength, you come under that. And in some bloody bloody unit I didn't like was the East Surreys, and that was our way up the Gothic line.
What?
The East Surreys.
We'll come on to them later.
Yeah. Well, it's one that nothing to do with the blokes of the East Surreys, really, I'll tell you that later. Anyway, the upshot of it was, you get different regiments, you know, which you... the Gurkhas, of course, bloody marvellous. Right. And but there you are. Your job was to get the stuff to them. Our job was that you could run into enemy fighting patrols, as we have done in the, what's your name? If they didn't see you and you hadn't delivered the stuff, you kept quiet. You didn't do anything to them. Your main job was to get the stuff to where you were going. After you'd unloaded and come back, you could have a shoot up with them if you did meet anybody. But the main job with a mule and animal transport, first choice, is get the stuff to the unit you're going to. That's the most important thing. Because, I mean, if you're seen by the enemy and you have to fight it and open up, you know, what's your name, obviously you do. But where possible, if you do, there's been cases where you've seen, or you get an enemy standing patrol, and you go round them. You don't sort of aggressively go for them. That's not your job. Your job is to get the stuff to where you're going. And in mountain warfare, there's no front line. There's no front line at all. We can infiltrate easily in theirs, and they can infiltrate. In fact, one German patrol came back. It was nearly 15 miles behind the bloody line. That was at the casino area, and shot up her blinking button. Because, as I say, there's no front line. Same in the jungle. Each unit takes the position, and you know, which is overlooks, you know, a strong position. When there's always places you can get through, made our job easier in some cases. You know, getting through. I mean, we went out with a Gurkha fighting patrol. I'll never forget that. We got Gurkha fighting patrol. And the Gurkhas sorted out a 210mm battery behind the German lines. And that's quite a way back through the German lines, right? And as I say, we were carrying all their gear. And that they were more or less, though they called it a fighting patrol, it was almost company strength with the Gurkhas. Bloody marvellous.
That, of course, would be
this
in Italy.
This is in Italy. Yeah, that was in Italy.
Coming back, you got up to Agadat, you said.
Yeah, and then we didn't actually have to do any work, really, until we got into the mountains at Keren. That's when our work really started. And, you know, as I say, we were working for Tom, Dick and Harry there because the mules are so short. There was only two mule companies for two divisions. I mean, when you think of a mule company, really... it's fit for a brigade. So they were very, very short on mules, and it meant a lot of the blokes, the infantry blokes themselves, were humping stuff. And like doing what we would call portering.
So you were taking up ammunition and food, were you?
Oh, yeah, taking out everything. Ammunition, food, everything. That was our job. Oh, yeah. I can't remember in Eritrea, because... things weren't as well organised in those days. I mean, the wounded there suffered a lot with gangrene, right? One of our corporals was wounded in the hand and he got gangrene. It's because we didn't have any fresh food. All we had was bullion biscuits. Didn't have any fresh food. Until suddenly, from South Africa, tins of a kind of, what was it, fruit juice came, and they gave us as much as we more or less wanted, all the troops, which we all broke out in desert sores, some blokes worse than others, and some of the sores, like ulcers, you can almost see the bone in their, you know, leg. I know, it's terrible, and that's why blokes got gangrene, because we didn't have anything like that. And water, short. We did get bananas, right, one time, which was good. That helped a lot. As I say, down there, the regiments in the two divisions, all regulars, Indian and ours. Royal Warwick's was another one. Yeah, Royal Warwick. And they lent us, the infantry would lend us, we had no motor transport, right? The infantry would loan us, and the drivers of the infantry, so that they could work from our headquarters back, say if the CO wants something and all this business. Now, the infantry were good that way, you know. But it just shows you what the way the army was buckered about by not being, you know, correctly assessed, and people thinking 25 years ago of the 1418 war and not progressed anything from it. And when the German army came through with their blitzkrieg, I mean, and those Germans had a lot of animal transport, as it, you know, they did find out, but they did have, you know, forethought on modern warfare.
Did you see much of the Battle of Carron?
Oh, yeah, oh, blimey, yeah. It was the normal thing, mortaring. The thing there with the mortaring, a lot of wounds were through the rock pieces as well. And there's no way you could more or less dig in. It must be bloody terrible for the infantry blokes. Yeah, it was the usual thing, you know. It casualtied quite a lot of mules. We lost. Didn't lose so many men, really. I mean, we were lucky. But and then the campaign didn't last terrifically, because, thank Christ, the ITIs were no bloody good at all. And if it had been the Germans, I don't think we'd have taken it if there'd been a brigade of Germans there, you know, holding that position. There was a roadblock which they'd put up, which the West Yorks, you know, took. And, good job of the old West Yorks.
What so about these Cypriots in the unit? What were they
like?
Oh,
yeah. No, they were good. Oh, the Cyps were good, bloody good muleteers. Our Cypriots were mainly Turks, ours were, but the other company had Greeks as well. They were all good. Can't remember them being any. They were very good. Good muleteers as well.
Did they speak English?
They had to learn basic English and words of command. And gradually you pick up the language. And of course, some of them could speak a bit of English. But, I mean, as the war went on, they got very, very, being able to speak English.
And what was the full title?